Here at Renew Energy Partners, climate change is very important to us, and so is beer. In every episode of the Green Beers podcast, we taste a beer together. We talk about the brewery and their sustainability practices. And then we talk about a topic relating to our work in decarbonizing buildings and mitigating climate change.
Welcome to Green Beers. My name is Mike Savage, and I'm here with
Charlie Lauren,
Nathan Montgomery,
and our very special guest,
Katie Cava.
Hey, Katie. So I'm going to introduce Katie. I have to say there's a moment when you realize that people that you once taught are now running the world, where you realize that A, how old you are, and B, how proud you are. So Katie was a student at Boston College when I taught there and was involved in the Environmental Scholars Program at the Environmental Studies Department. And so we've known each other since the early 2000s. When did you graduate from BC?
I graduated in 2008.
Yeah, so 2014. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's for going on 20 years now.
Yeah.
Katie is now a sustainability program manager at Weyerhaeuser. Incredibly cool and very exciting for us, because just to learn how you got here and what the sustainability team at a major corporation does, really interesting for our listeners. And then again, for me, just a moment of real pride to see all that you've accomplished in your career. So welcome, Katie.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. It's a little bit startling, isn't it, to think back that it was 20 years ago?
Yeah. I don't like that as a millennial.
It was. I don't think I did the math, but yeah, that's a big number.
That's a big number. All right. I'm opening my beer.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right. Then
and I want to point out to everybody that Weyerhaeuser is, of course, based in Seattle, right?
And that's right. Yep.
So it is 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah. So Katie is an incredibly good sport.
I'm going to very casually drink this in a small conference room.
She's in a small conference room with her beer hidden behind a phone. That's real dedication to the pod.
That's right.
So Katie, when we first met each other, you were an undergraduate at Boston College. You were deeply involved in the environmental studies program, took a course with me on environmental policy, and a course we did on nature and American culture, which was reading about really sort of depictions of the natural world on this continent from pre-colonial times to the modern era. And then you were an environmental scholar, which was very cool. You did an independent study with Dr. Auger, we were saying, who was a field biologist.
Yep.
So what is the road for Katie Cava from Boston College's environmental studies program to sustainability program manager at Weyerhaeuser?
Yeah, great question, Charlie. It's also fun to think back about where I was whenever I entered undergrad. And I will say, I think whenever I was going into undergrad, I grew up in a pretty rural area. I always loved science. Mm-hmm. And
where did you grow up?
I grew up in Salinas, California.
Okay.
It's a big agricultural area. And I did a lot of things like 4-H when I was growing up, so which involved raising animals. And I thought for a while I might want to be a large animal veterinarian.
Mm-hmm.
But I obviously chose not to go that route, and thought for a moment maybe I would want to be a wildlife biologist. But then I went to BC, and I just loved the school. I loved their commitment to service, the Jesuit education principles.
Yep.
It was really cool to get, being from California, to get the chance to go to Boston. And so I went to BC, and turns out BC did not have a wildlife biology program, but they did have a biology program and an environmental studies program. And one thing that was really unique about BC's environmental studies program, which you obviously know, is that it was pretty uniquely focused on urban ecology,
yes,
and urban environmental issues. And that was something I had never thought about before. And so when I left undergrad, I really had this whole entire different thought process around nature that truly involved people. And gosh, this is really going to date us, but back in 2008, that was back whenever like we were just starting to realize that climate change was going to be a very big deal. And not everyone was realizing that at the time.
Right. But not everyone was on board, as evidenced by how long it took to take it seriously. But yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so when I left BC, having studied biology and doing the environmental studies program, I really wanted to work at the intersection of people and the environment. I love people and being in community and talking with people. And so I knew I wanted to utilize that skill set that I have. And I also love being in science and nature. So after I graduated from BC, I, like anyone, have had a bit of a meandery career path, or like many people, I've had a meandery career path. So that word caught me there. I worked for a nonprofit that did outdoor education for middle school and high school girls. And then I had a big stint of my career where I did habitat restoration work, working on urban natural areas. So this is quite common out in the Pacific Northwest. We have lots of parks that are actually natural areas. So they're forested areas. And the program that I was involved in did removal of invasive species and planting back the native plants that would naturally live in that area. And I did that both on the non...
These are natural areas in and around cities?
Yeah, yeah. Very cool. It could be, like, for instance, I have a park where I live now in Seattle that's 5 minutes from my house that's like almost 100 acres. And some of that is landscaped and some of that is a forest that you can hike through. So really cool asset that we have out here. Mm-hmm. And I did that both on the environmental side, the environmental nonprofit side. And then I also worked in the city parks department. So have worked on both the public and the nonprofit side. And while I was doing that work, it was amazing, but essentially what I did was ran volunteer events or helped volunteers run their own volunteer events to get people to remove those plants that should not be in the forest and plant the plants that should be. And I had this moment where I was like, the world is facing some really big challenges when it comes to the environment and nature. And I was working with people who were like already bought in. They were already part of the solution. And I had this moment where I was like, that's great, but I think I want to go work in a space where like people might not be so 100% bought in, or where I feel like I can make more of a change. And so I did an evening program to get my MBA with a focus in sustainability. And while I was doing that, I got an internship at Weyerhaeuser that has grown into the role I have now. So that's how I got here.
Amazing. So MBA, Katie Kava, an amazing if you think about it, we're not going to tackle this if we don't create teams and approaches and deal structures and everything else that's involved to work with companies and people that aren't necessarily already there. I mean, it's not about the people that are already working on it. It's about how do we make this work and all the settings where climate change isn't being tackled already. So,
yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Or maybe it is, but like not, it needs to be tackled from a new angle or there's new business ideas. I think there's just, this is a potential big change.
Right. And I happen to know that Weyerhaeuser has made some very, very aggressive and impressive commitments to tackling climate change. So it's just that what really we're all involved now in Renew and a role like yours, were involved in helping bring real change on climate change to settings where it hadn't, for you know, good reason, it hadn't been a priority until the last few years. So that's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Katie, Weyerhaeuser has a significant portfolio of companies and products. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about sort of the main objective and sort of mission behind Weyerhaeuser?
Yeah, Mike, absolutely. And I think that helps for kind of understanding the work that I do and how that might be a little bit different than what the sustainability or my team and how that might be a little bit different than other sustainability professionals. So Weyerhaeuser is a company that operates in both the United States and Canada. And we do three main things. The first is that we own and manage timberlands for wood production. So we own about and manage about 10.7 million acres in the United States. In the US, we are the largest private landowner. And so we manage those forests to produce timber that ultimately is getting sold into the market. But at the same time, we are also managing our forests for a whole bunch of other benefits, wildlife habitat, carbon storage, clean air, clean water, all those things that our forests can provide. We're doing that in tandem with wood production. We also have long-term licenses that cover about 14 million acres in Canada. And then, so that's one arm of our company. Then we have our wood products business. So we have 35 manufacturing facilities in the United States and Canada. Those are primarily located in the United States. And in our manufacturing facilities, we're making wood products. So that could be anything from solid lumber, like you're used to seeing at Home Depot or Lowe's. That's our the largest number of products that we make. The majority of our mills are lumber mills. We also make products like OSB, plywood, and some other engineered wood products that are used in other aspects of building. But we make long-lived wood products. And then we have a third branch of our company, and this is one that's really exciting and has grown and changed a bit as we think about what are the business opportunities that are related to delivering climate solutions, delivering nature-based solutions into the market. We have kind of all the other things we can do with our lands while we're managing them for timber. And we launched a few years ago our natural climate solutions business. We've always thought about what else we could do with our lands, things like how do we get recreation on them? Can we utilize them for things like wind energy generation? But we've really been thinking about that in a different way with a lens of how can we help combat climate change while we're doing that? And our natural climate solutions business is really looking at our land base and saying, how can we do things like generate carbon credits off our land? How can we grow and expand our mitigation banking program? How can we grow and expand our lands to be used to create things like wind and solar energy? And so that's a place where when we think about our business and climate change solutions, there's a really wonderful overlap. And it's an exciting new place for us to be playing in. And I think it's where we, with our very large land base, have a real solution to offer up to the world.
Wow, that's exciting. You know, it's actually really timely because there are articles this fall of 2023. There was a study that came out recently about the percentage of the carbon reduction targets we could hit by managing our forests better and reforesting areas that had been forested. This just came out in November of 23. So that's really exciting that you all are thinking of it as part of your business to think this way. Just as an aside, what is a mitigation banking program?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I like to say, as a sustainability program manager, I know a whole little about a whole lot of things, so I can't go into the full details. But mitigation banking program, it's a program that's run or kind of permitted through the Army Corps of Engineers. And essentially what it means is that if there's going to be a development somewhere that's going to have an impact, typically on a wetland, the developer will have to buy credits that provide that offset that negative impact by creating wetland habitat somewhere else. And so we've identified areas of our lands that could create that wetland benefit. We enroll those in a mitigation banking program, and then that becomes a tradable asset that a developer can buy, or any, I don't know if they're always developers, but that some entity can buy to kind of offset that impact.
Interesting. So you're generating revenues off of your management of that land and helping protect the environment at the same time, in essence.
Yeah. And then when we think about kind of the values that you manage a land based for, that piece of land would be managed primarily for wetland environmental values, as opposed to another portion of our land which might be managed, which is going to have more timber production management values on it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
What's the the, I guess, the maturity cycle for most of these timbers? Like, how long do they, are they in the ground before you, you harvest? I'm a super nerdy question.
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike. No, it's not. This is a very common question that we get. And like everything that has to do with nature, the answer is it depends, both on where we're physically standing and in our ownership. And I'm just going to speak to our United States ownership because I know that ownership a little bit better than our Canadian management area. So in the U.S., we primarily own lands in the Pacific Northwest, the southeastern United States, and then kind of the New England area. And so our land in the Pacific Northwest, we're primarily growing Douglas fir. That's a very fast-growing, great wood tree out here. And those are harvested somewhere between 40 and 50 years. That's the typical harvest age. Now, when they're in the colder part of our ownership, they might get harvested a little bit later because they're growing a little bit slower. So it's going to take them a little bit longer to reach that trunk, that log size that we want whenever we're going to be ready to harvest them. In our southeastern United States, we're primarily growing loblolly pine. Both of these are native species to these regions. I think it's important to note that. In the southeast, it's warm. It rains a lot. Stuff grows real fast. Those trees are typically harvested at about 30 years. And then in our New England area, land ownership, we're growing primarily hardwoods. So it's a really different kind of forest management. And those trees are going to be harvested almost closer to 100 years. And there it's really going to be species dependent. And so as you can see, just the rotation age is going to be really different depending on the geography. But one thing I do want to say is that anything that we harvest, we are always replanting like as fast as we can. Typically, that's going to be we have to replant within two growing seasons. We try to replant within one. And get those seedlings back in the ground, get that area reforested, get those trees growing quickly. Not only does that help with things like soil stability, but it also gets and wildlife habitat, but it's going to help get the next crop of trees and that next rotation of forest growing as soon as possible. And one cool thing that goes along with our timberlands that I didn't mention we do, we own our own nurseries. And so we're growing our own seedlings, and our timberlands teams work really closely with our nursery teams to put those orders in. They like know what we're harvesting. They put those plant orders in. In the West, it's a 2-year cycle. In the South, it takes about 6 months to grow a seedling. So they're working really closely to make sure we have the seedlings we need for the areas where we're harvesting.
But you can replant sort of on demand or when the time is right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there's always things like natural disasters or fires where all of a sudden what we thought was going to happen isn't. And right. One thing that's really, it's never nice when those happen. But having our own seedlings and nurseries allows us to flex, to up the production of seedlings if we need to. If we have like a hurricane come through or a fire come through, we do have that ability to meet that demand internally. Yeah, which is helpful.
Well, so that sort of brings me to my next question, although I hadn't thought about it in the mitigation context. So we've been talking a lot on the podcast, and certainly it's a big piece of what Renew is seeing in our work about the commitments that companies are making across the country to decarbonization and the extent to which climate has become a part of the business plan, as you've already described for Weyerhaeuser, for example. But can you talk a little bit about how your job has changed over the last few years, if it has? And I was thinking about it in terms of, you know, carbon decarbonization planning and so forth. But, you know, you also point to the fact that there are more unpredictable weather events. And are you seeing that in your work where you all are having to plan for more uncertainty?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I'll speak from my own role. Sitting in the kind of corporate function. So I, in my role, support our certification program from the company-wide level. And so I work really closely with our Timberlands teams that are implementing our SFI forest management certification practices on the ground. So that's the certification we have that confirms that we're managing our forest sustainably. We get externally audited against the SFI forest management standard. And as a part of the new standard, if we just talk about some things that have changed, as part of the new standard, we now have to, and we had already been on a journey to do this, so we were well equipped as a company, but that standard just updated, requiring companies to think about and address and identify their key climate change risks. We had already been on our own journey to do that as part of responding to climate change and identifying both what were the risks and opportunities internally for us as a company. But I think there is no doubt that the climate is changing, and we are really fortunate at Weyerhaeuser to have a group of internal scientists that study the climate change impacts, and they study a whole bunch of things. One of the things they are taking into consideration is climate change impacts and what do we do long term versus short term. But I would say, like, one of the things that I see in our timberlands is if we get back to just thinking about replanting. Thinking about the weather and how we expect weather to change, and looking at where our seedlings come from, are we growing seedlings that are perhaps that come from like the more eastern part of Washington, which is drier, has a drier climate, so that seedlings can live in an overall drier environment. Or are we thinking about planting more robust seedlings in areas that are going to be more weather exposed so that they can have a chance to survive? Generally, once our trees are like teenagers, they're good. They can make it. But that kind of young age, those first 2-3 growing seasons, we need to like give them a little bit of coddling just the way we might feed our children like pureed baby food. So I think that's some things that we're doing. And then on the, you know, I do think on the company side, forests are an amazing climate change solution. And we have been doing sustainable forest management for a very long time. Weyerhaeuser was one of the first companies to start thinking about replanting harvested areas and thinking about, you know, timber as a crop. They had this whole advertising campaign to try to get people to think about replanting, not just harvesting. And so we've been doing sustainable forest management for a very long time. And we are spending a lot of time helping people understand what that looks like. And what does that mean from a carbon perspective? How can they feel comfortable doing things like building with wood, and where especially wood can be a substitute for other higher emitting materials? I think this is where there's some really great opportunities, and is allowing us to think differently, both in how we manage our forests, how we help people understand our forests, and how we look at growing our business.
Amazing. Yeah. And it's fascinating to think about the fact that just recently now that the sustainability indicators are asking not just for decarbonization goals, but also risk management.
Sure.
Which is the moment we've arrived at. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
And embodied carbon, right? Into what you're getting at there, which the stick building versus concrete, and, you know, seeing a lot of new opportunities there. It's very, Jermaine, I think, to everything that we're seeing. In terms of the future, is there anything that you're seeing or expecting in the world of forest management or just at Weyerhaeuser?
Ooh, do you want to? That was really broad. Do you want to? Do you want to point me, or I can go anywhere with that?
You can go anywhere, but I was more thinking about like just sort of trends that you're expecting to, or, you know, sort of trends you've seen or might hope to see gain action.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to get a little meta here. Sustainability, great. Okay. as kind of a corporate sustainability professional, I spend my time split between working with our businesses and helping to make sure that so one of the things I do is like make sure we have sustainability embedded into our business planning processes so that whenever we're planning, like our wood products manufacturing facilities are thinking about like, how do we get the most of every log? We help them understand that also has a tie. That's a direct tie into sustainability. Or I'm working with our teams on the ground to help them implement, you know, get the resources they need or whatever support I can give them to implement the certification requirements on the ground. So like I spend time with our teams, helping them do the work or supporting them to do the work of sustainability or gathering the outcomes of their work up at the company level and helping us share that. The other part of what I do as a sustainability professional is like understand what the expectations are out in the world for companies and bring those back into the company and say like, hey, the world is changing. Here's what that change looks like and how do we come and integrate that into our own program? And I think everybody in the sustainability world or anyone tracking climate change, it is like that world is changing very fast. I have worked at Weyerhaeuser for 6.5 years and there has been a lot of change in the expectations from our investors, from our global community, from the communities where we operate, from external stakeholders on how transparent we are, on what we're thinking about, on what we're disclosing. So when I think about the future, I think what we're going to start seeing and what I am excited about, and it's not going to be easy, it's going to be challenging, but like how do we think about climate solutions and nature solutions and solutions that are thinking equitably all together? We have it is natural to kind of hone in on one of these and say, we're going to talk about addressing climate change and what does that look like? And how are we getting to net zero? Or like, how are we decarbonizing? And then we kind of turn and we look, to another column and we say, how do we support nature? And how do we make sure that businesses are thinking about their nature related risks and addressing those and supporting conservation and supporting wildlife outcomes? And then we kind of turn again and say, how do we make sure we're engaging with the communities where we work and we're being authentic and we're making space for people and we're being inclusive? And I think the next big wave is like, how do we do all of those together? And that is like big, complicated, meaty work. But I also think that this is one thing that is where forests, like maybe I'm obviously maybe a little biased, but where forests have this beautiful solution where it can tie those things together. Wow. We can create nature-based solutions from forests. And I think there are going to be other things out there that can like create opportunities to store carbon, that can drive protection of natural areas, that keeps forests forested. And at the same time, we're going to be able to engage and support our local rural communities that use that as their employment base. And so I think this tying these together, we're going to need more things like that tie this together. But that's like the next thing that it's going to be hard. But I think we can do it.
That is so exciting. Well, first of all, it's great to hear your passion for it and we share it. I mean, that's really exciting. And I hadn't thought about it, but you make a really good case for the fact that forests could be a model for this deeply integrated thinking, which, as you point out, is the frontier to get to true sustainability, right? You can't, there's 100 ways. I say this as if it's easy. There's a million ways to meet net zero, but there's ways that support the health of communities and are aware of inequities or sustain communities. And choosing the integrated path is the hardest road, but also, as you point out, the most exciting. That's really cool. I think we just provided a great public service to young people everywhere looking to get into this business, because I have to say, you make the job of sustainability manager sound really cool.
Well, it is.
I love that.
I'm
assuming, I think correctly, that we're going to need a lot more of them in the coming years. So people are listening.
So.
Yeah. as evidenced by the fact that most companies are adding people. I think your team has grown over the last few years, if I remember correctly.
Our team has, yeah. And one thing I also like to say, if we're targeting young folks who are thinking about what they want to do with their career, is you can do sustainability work even if sustainability is not in your title. And so I like to say that a lot of what I do is talk about other people's work. So our foresters are doing the work on the ground of, protecting our riparian areas. They're planning out leave areas. They're the ones replanting trees. I get to talk about their work. But there's a lot of places where you can do the work of sustainability that someone like me, who has sustainability in their title, is going to be asking you, what do you do? What are you thinking about? And then kind of summarizing that all up as at the company-wide level.
Right.
But I think about how many roles are related to sustainability. And I think that is especially true when we think about the S, like in ESG, and the G. Like, we all have a role in supporting the communities where we operate and work, and making a safe workplace, and creating an inclusive workplace, and creating a place where diversity is welcome and encouraged and sought after. And that's one thing that I think sometimes people don't think about. We think about the E so much of ESG, that we all have a really important role to play. And I think we don't always think of that. So I'd like to think about that too. Like, we can all do sustainability work in our roles, even if it's not in our title.
Well, and you made a really interesting point about your role and your team's role in the company, which is to go out and help people think about this as they plan, as they implement, mm-hmm. Recognizing that it can be part of your daily activities wherever you are in a company.
Yep.
We often think about it in terms of outcomes, metric tons of carbon reduced, but it's really those outcomes come from the inputs, and the inputs are about everybody recognizing what piece can they do in their job to get to these goals, which is really cool. And it hadn't occurred to me, but that's really, as you pointed out, that's one of the roles of your team, is to help people think that way, which is really cool. Yeah,
that is 100. Like, that is one of the things that is on my project portfolio, is helping our teams. Like, our foresters or are the teams in our mills, like, they might be thinking about the work they do in a different set of words or a different set of language. And in the sustainability world, we might use a different phrase. And sometimes the work I do is just like connecting the two.
Right.
Like, I'm like, you want to use less materials to build roads? Awesome.
That's minimizing. Right. That's minimizing waste.
Yeah. Like, right. Yeah. Like, we want to, I'm trying to think, like, it helps us to enroll our acres in conservation agreements that has other really amazing sustainability outcomes. I think that one's like a little more obvious, but we want to use the most of every log that comes into our facility. Absolutely. Like, that's efficient resource use. And so sometimes it's helping our teams understand, this is how I contribute to sustainability. Oh my gosh, I'm already thinking of that. And now I can, when someone asks me, how do I do sustainability work? I know what that is, and I can think about how to maximize that.
Right, and I may even see more opportunities for it. That's just amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's been great to hear sort of how equity and sustainability, justice, diversity, everything is going away from, I think, sort of going back to that trend that you're talking about, like, out of siloed thinking and out of sort of tactics and just into guiding principles. And I very excited about the future. I think at times it can be scary to think about, and all the sort of climate crises that we're watching. And it's great mm-hmm. to have, somebody on here with a very positive, upbeat attitude, because it can be, it is not always that pretty outside. So I think with that, we should talk about some beer, though. We got some important stuff.
All right.
Let's talk beer. So as we get to the ratings, Katie, will you tell us two things about your own beer experience? First, do you remember your first beer?
Like, Charlie. Okay, this is what I remember about my first beer.
Okay.
When I when I was a kid, we used to go to the pizza parlor. There was a, I grew up in a pretty rural area. So there was like a pizza parlor that was like maybe like 10 minutes away. And it was like the nearest place we could go without mm-hmm. having to cook. And it was called Village Pizza. And sometimes we would get our neighbors. We only had like four neighbors down my street. And we would go and we would get pizza. And there was also some like pinball machines and like the quarters where you could get candy. And I remember every once in a while, my dad would let me take a sip of his beer. And I thought it was so gross. So I'm going to go with that as like the first beer I ever drank, as yep. opposed to saying that I probably drank beer when I was not supposed to.
Yeah, that's a general trend. That. Right.
Yeah.
So that would, like, whatever the sort of go-to beer at the Village Pizza was it Salinas?
Salinas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Which I think is now Angelina's Pizza. I think it renamed the same location.
We could probably find out what their beer is, but.
Yeah. Cool. But I prepped my favorite beer.
Okay.
Yes. Tell us what your favorite beer is.
Can I tell you that?
Absolutely.
Okay. One's not available anymore. My really good friends in Seattle, who have now moved to Arizona, had a brewery here for a while called Peddler Brewing Company, and they had this really great IPA called On Your Left. So I can't choose that one.
Nice. Little plug,
so instead,
though. Little plug, though.
Yeah, it's a good plug.
If they ever come back. Yeah.
It's a throwback. Yeah. But so I'm going to pick, there's this really great spot. I live in a kind of really close to Seattle's like brewery district. And there's this great spot where a brewery and a cidery came together and they jointly occupy one location. And it's Bailbreaker Beers and Yonder Cidery. And I'm going to pick one from each because I can, because they're nice. Together.
Absolutely.
And I really like the Top Cutter IPA from Bailbreaker. And then I love Yonder Cidery, just has like a dry and a semi-dry cider. And I like both of those.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's really great.
So, you know, one of our top beers I think it's in our top five, is a beer you can only get in St. Louis, which we have because Taylor, whom you remember, Katie, from our trip together to Costa Rica, she brought some Urban Chestnut beer back from St. Louis to the pod, and it scored highly. So it makes me think, Mike, when we increase the budget for the podcast, we're going to have to do regional podcasts.
Absolutely, yeah. We got to go to a city and just work our way through the local breweries. I think that could be a
absolutely,
good
or at least take a recommendation, and Katie can take us to Bailbreaker.
Yeah, I can.
All right. Cool. Well, and finally, if you could have a beer with one person, living or dead, and you should know that this whoever you choose will join a very eclectic roster and growing roster. We'll describe how they fit when you tell us your selection. Okay. We're asking everybody this, and it's become a really cool group.
Okay, well, I'm like in a real family mode right now. So I originally picked my Noni, who is my dad's mom, because she's not alive anymore. But then my Noni never drank, so I thought she would probably not appreciate drinking a beer with me.
I would like to officially nominate your Noni to join the group just because she's your Noni.
She would have had a lot of opinions.
she but could instead, be I'm going to go with.
Yeah, I'm going to go with my grandfather, which is my mom's dad, and this is because he worked in ag his whole life. Towards the end, he was a lettuce researcher and a lettuce breeder for a long time. And I remember when I told him, Charlie, I was probably still at BC, that like I wanted to do sustainability work. He was like, "Ooh, that's a loaded term." And
I love that.
I think now, working at a company that manages forests and makes wood products, and I do sustainability work, we could have had some really great conversations about this line of work. And he did know, he was still alive when I started working at Weyerhaeuser. And I think he was really, really proud of that.
Have to been very proud.
But now that I'm in it more, I think he would have had some things to say in a good conversational way.
Well, I love that. And thank you for that, for telling us a little bit more about him. He actually joins our colleague, Aurora Fernandez's father. So there's two relatives in the group. It also now runs all the way from Odysseus to Nina Simone to Tiger Woods. So we have a very eclectic, wow. And Tom Brady.
Oh yeah.
And Rachel Carson.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So we got quite a crew what we call the Renew Beer Garden. So.
Yeah.
Great. Oh, well, that's really great. What's your grandfather's name? What was his name?
David Williams. David.
David. Grandpa David. Yep. All right. Awesome.
Welcome to the
cheers. Cheers to that. Yeah. Welcome to the party.
Yeah. Cheers. Yeah.
All right.
Ready. Nathan.
Wonderful. Yeah. So we're going to run down a little bit about the sustainability, about the beer we're drinking. Again, Katie, just want to echo how wonderful it's been to hear your perspective, positive attitude, thinking about the social part of ESG in addition to the environmental part. It's something that we do at Renew as well. I mean, mm-hmm. It's when we look at projects, obviously we have to make a financial case, but for why the project would work. But I've gone to conferences where, you know, if you build a sustainable lab, science lab in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and you don't think about living space or parking space, you're not really, it's not a great contribute. You're not thinking about your greater community or where your employees are going to, how they're going to get to the building and et cetera. Or talking to colleges and, okay, we can retrofit your HVAC, but I also know your student body is talking about a composting initiative. Can we roll all of these together into a greater sustainability plan? So it's just really, again, refreshing to hear that perspective. In beer, we're talking about beer news, we're drinking, again, Ballast Point Brewing, which is started in San Diego in 1992. And we are drinking their Sculpin IPA, named after these orange sculpin fish. And it's their first award-winning and most award-winning brew. So I figured that's where we should, that's what we should try.
Good choice.
In terms of sustainability, we have breweries with varying amounts of sustainability initiatives. I'm curious about all of your opinions in terms of how far these sustainability initiatives go, but they certainly have at least a diverse amount. Sidestream cardboard in terms of recycling it using a cardboard compactor. They are saving electricity by using air curtains in front of their cold box doors. They have added a low pressure mode to their steam boilers to reduce the natural gas consumption on site. They also were certified with the best water saving practices through the San Diego Guaranteed Water for Industry program. So water recycling. In addition, on the subject of water, they have reduction initiatives such as reuse of reverse osmosis concentrate into water towers, as well as the reuse of cooling water into hot water tanks, and the reuse of clean in-place rinse water into pre-rinse tanks. So multiple stages along the way of the brewing process where they're using water, they're reusing it. They sell spent production grade to be used for animal feed and fertilizer. We have seen that before on the pod. LED and solar lights in at least one of their facilities. That's something, again, we install with Renew. That's a good first step to decarbonization. Part of their brewing process has been shifted to nighttime hours so that they can reduce demand on the grid during peak hours, which I thought was an interesting thing because our last pod, we were talking about really how peak demand can affect the entire grid and the price of energy. And I'll end by saying the one statistic they cite is in 2022, relative to how much beer was made, they sent 29% less trash to landfill and reduced carbon dioxide usage by 12%. So that's from 2021 to 2022. So certainly on the journey of sustainability, quite a few measures mentioned there. And a reminder to everybody as we rate 1 out of 10 for taste, and then we can add up to 1 point for sustainability. So if you think it's really good on sustainability, you can add a full point. You could add a half a point, 0.75, 0.25, whatever you're feeling. So Would anybody like to? I can start, or anybody can start.
Go ahead, Nathan. Kick it off, and then we'll go.
Yeah.
Katie and me and Mike.
Let's do it. So, just taking one more sip.
Important last sip.
Yeah, it's I'm familiar with this beer. I think it's got a nice complex taste. I'm going to give it a 7.5 in terms of taste because I think it's just it's a strong IPA. I'm going to give it an 8, and I'm going to give it a half a point
okay.
for sustainability.
Alrighty.
So it's going to leave me at an 8.5.
Good solid score. Katie, what do you think?
Yeah.
I'm going to do the same. I have also had the Sculpin IPA before. I really like it. I like a hoppy IPA with a little bit of a floral hit. So it's right up there in my up my alley. And I'm going to give them maybe I'll do 0.75 for sustainability. I loved all of the environmental things. Would also like to hear what they're doing around their people and people management. And I'm sure there is something in there. But you know, as we think about expanding our definition of sustainability to include people, I think it's a good just reminder. So,
totally agree.
8.75.
Yeah, I like this one too. I think it's got to be one of the better West Coast IPAs. It is complex, and I would describe it exactly as you did, Katie. You'll see, I'm a pretty easy grader, so I'm going to give it an 8.5 for flavor. And I'm going to give it 0.5 because what I'm not hearing, and I don't know enough about their location, but I feel like they could have emphasized more on the renewable side. There's some stuff they could be doing that they're not doing. But they're definitely doing more than some of the breweries we've talked about. So I'm going to give them an 8.5 with a half point kicker for a total of 9.
And Charlie, this first one, I've had the beer, even though I'm traveling, I got the beer. Where do you think? I want to do a test on your ability to guess my rating. What do you think we're at?
So, Katie, I have been scoring the last two beers for Mike because he's been on the road. And I have having done this for 3 years, I have a pretty good sense of how Mike will rate beers. But this is the first time we can test whether I am correctly rating things for Mike.
So this is, let's see.
I would say, I'm going to say that Mike's not a fan of IPAs. This is a good IPA. There's some complexity to it, which he's going to like, but the hoppiness is going to be a question. I think he's going to give it a 7 with a half a point kicker for a total of 7.5.
That's impressive. That's what that is. So,
I get it?
No, yeah, I was thinking like 6.5 to 7. You know, it's definitely hop forward. I don't love hops, and you know, I know like we host a beer related podcast, but I just feel like, I don't know, like floral, pine, all these like sort of ways of talking about beer. I just have no idea. It's a beer. I don't know what to say. It's just, it's either good or bad. It's very binary for me. And yeah.
Well, yes. I almost said 6.5, but I was in the ballpark. Yeah.
So no, I mean, you were I don't like to go too low when everyone else loves it, but you know, or maybe I do. I don't know. But it's definitely a 7.5. And
sweet.
Yeah.
That means my earlier scores than the other two beers.
They could count.
And that the rankings will count.
Yeah.
Katie, Mike has his own category called crushability, which how many would he like to drink?
Oh.
So what's your crushability score on this one?
This is a 0.3.
That's like, could you session it? Like, could you just kind of drink it all day, or could you drink it quickly?
Yeah. So that's a great way of describing it. It's just like how many I would want to drink in a row. Could I? You know, depends on the beer.
It's sort of a combination of how many does he want to drink and how many could he drink.
Yeah.
And so the 0.3 suggests that's a
this
pretty
isn't getting finished.
Score.
Yeah.
This would be like for me meeting up with friends, you're gonna have one.
Yeah.
But if it was like hanging out after skiing in the parking lot,
you gotta get a higher crushability.
Probably not
score.
This one.
Right.
I would do like a Rainier.
Right.
It's like exactly. You know.
Yeah.
Makes sense based on location.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you gotta go for your local.
So Nathan, how'd we do?
So. Yeah, it's an average of 8.43 is our score. You need a 8.93 to reach the top five. So it's not in our top five, but it's certainly, I would say it's a decent rating compared to...
Wow, it's getting hard to crack the top five. Yeah.
Absolutely. So it's a great beer. Again, I've always enjoyed a Sculpin IPA. You know, seems like most of us enjoyed it here. I know it's not Mike's favorite, but, you know, Ballast Point, thank you for brewing this beer.
And Katie, absolutely. Thank you for being with us. This was absolutely fantastic to reconnect, and we'll look forward to our field trip to Seattle.
Oh, I cannot wait. I will take you through the brewery district when you come visit.
We'll count on that.
Looking forward to that.
Okay, great.
Alrighty. Thanks all. This has been Green Beers.
Green Beers is brought to you by Renew Energy Partners, your partner in building decarbonization. Decarbonizing your building is good for the earth and it's a smart business move, but it's complicated and it can cost you a lot of money. Our goal is to decarbonize your building while saving you money, so all of those retrofits pay for themselves. Learn more at renewep.com.